Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your rock straw downs of NBA podcasts. Because while I do think that industrial age machinery is often quite beautiful, I'm certainly glad we don't use much of it anymore. What's up, everybody? It's your host, Joe Borelli, coming at you from my studio in Brooklyn, New York. It is, what day is it? Wednesday? Is it Wednesday or Thursday? I have no idea. Wednesday, I think. November 7th, 2018. And we recorded this podcast last night, me and my friend Michael Keith from The Fuzz Down Under. We talked about a whole number of things. Hang out. It's fun. Give a good listen. You'll enjoy it. And ways to get in touch with the show. Let's do that. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Borelli. You can follow the Superflight Podcast on Twitter at the Superflight Pod. You can also follow the Dunk Tales with me and James Hollis at Dunk Tales Pod. And you can email the show at superflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can download on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, yada, yada, yada. I Love Radio. I don't know. Any number of places. And please rate and review on iTunes and leave a message and a 5-star rating only, please. Or whatever you want to leave. You know what? Just do something, please. Just leave me anything would be great. Okay. Anyway, that's my plea to you for the evening. Last night was a big night, huh? The Democrats took the House, which is encouraging. It's fun. Not fun. It was very nerve-wracking, and I was a little worried. I stayed up way too late to watch the politics coverage, to watch the election coverage. And, you know, kudos to everyone who got out and voted, and Pennsylvania, my home state, you made me proud by going pretty much Democrat across the board in the House. But they say it's a rebuke to Trump, and he's too dumb to understand anyway, so it doesn't really matter. He's come out and said some really dumbass things in his speech today to the press. He's a fucking moron. I can't take it. Oh my God, can we just get rid of this guy? Anyway, I still firmly believe, even though a couple of the states went really red again and we didn't take the Senate, there's still more of us than there are of them. I feel bad that Andrew Gillum didn't win in Florida for the governor's election because his opponent ran some really racist bullshit campaigns down there and apparently worked. Beto, that's depressing, but whatever. He's in Texas, and Texas is just red. So, I don't know. That's enough of my politics coverage for you. I'm not very good at politics. I have my strong opinions, but I'm not good at speaking about them. So that's that. Anyway, we have a nice little discussion last night about LeBron James. Way too much LeBron James talk this week for me. And there's all that. But I'm not going to give you guys a good or a long spiel this evening, except to tell you this. And I say this almost every time, but yes, most of my stories come from being on the train, on the subway, on the A train or the C train in the morning when I'm on my way to work. Well, the other morning, oh my God, there's days when you're just like, you know, I'm up, and with the time change, it's nice you get the extra hour of, I mean, I hate the time change. I really wish we would just stay in daylight savings time all the time because I really hate when it gets dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but whatever, this is life. Not complaining about that. The time change is kind of nice, but you know, for the first couple days, it feels like it's really late when it's really not. Anyway, get up the other morning, go vote, go walk to the train, get on the train. I'm getting to work early. I'm feeling good about my vote and you know, feeling good about everything. And it just happened to be one of those mornings where I got on the stinkiest train known to humankind. I get in there and like, I really just wanted to puke. Like there was no one there I could see that was actually causing the funk. I think it was the residual funk left by someone who, and listen, I'm not picking on homeless people. I can't even imagine what it must be like to be a homeless person in a big city or at all. I'm sure it's not fun. I'm sure it's, and I feel bad for people, and I wish I could do more to help. And it's really like a lot of times it's a mental health issue, and it's just, it can be drug related, but either way, it's, you know, these are people that actually really need help. And, but often they are people who, because if they take, the opportunity to stay in a shelter, it comes with other things. I don't know. It's problematic. I understand for homeless people. I don't know. My wife was telling me about this. When you call the police to help a homeless person you think you're helping, they actually just pick them up and throw them in jail. So it's no good for them. And you can only stay in a homeless shelter for so long. Anyways, it's rough. I don't mean to get depressing here, but there's a distinct funk or a distinct smell about people that have to live on the street. And I'm not making fun, but it's a very potent, really not good smell. You know it when you smell it. It smells just god awful. So I get in the train and there's no one around. There's no one, you know, that was causing the stink, but it was lingering. It was hanging in the air. And I look across the way and there's people sitting on the bench across from us, and like, there's just a pool of spit on the floor. Someone was obviously just spitting. Like it's running all over the floor. Oh my God, I'm going to throw up thinking about this. Anyway, it was disgusting. It was gross. And that was terrible. But after a while, after we got through a couple stops and the doors opened and closed a few times, like the smell started to dissipate. It was getting better. And then we get another stop and more people get on that are like, I don't think these people are homeless. They just did not bathe. And oh my God, it was just awful. And then as if that wasn't bad enough, I was lucky enough to be sitting next to a girl who was obviously had a cold. I know that sounds crazy, but she was chewing a lozenge. So that smelled nice. I could smell the effervescence. It was flowing in through my nose. And I was like, wow, I'm very happy to be sitting next to this girl right now. But this dude right in front of us just kept farting. Like every time he would do it, he was like, cough, and he would fart, and it smelled so bad. Like it was the worst fucking train of all time. It was just disgusting, nasty. Like this dude is going to work, he's dressed, he's got his slacks on, he's got like a white button-down shirt, he's got his bag. Like, dude, don't you want to, like, I mean, you know, maybe he has bowel problems, I don't know, but it was gross. I hate it when people fart on the train. It's just nasty. It's so gross, man. Like, the air does not circulate fast enough to get rid of that stench. Anyway, this is, you know, for all of New York's wonderful things, for all of the culture here, the arts and the music and the people and the food and any, you know, any amount of things you can do here, the shopping and whatever. There's so many great, great, great things in New York. The subway sucks. It sucks in so many ways. It's great because, you know, you can get from point A to point B. You don't need a car. It's a unique city in the States in that way. You don't really need a car to get where you're going in New York. We don't own one, so that's awesome. But the downside is, God, getting stuck on the train with some really stinky people. It's just fucking tough, man. It is a slog sometimes. Holy shit. But anyway, I welcome you all to come to New York and hang out with me and ride the stinky, stinky train. It's fun. That's my little thing for tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Try not to get grossed out by the spit thing like I did, because thinking about it again, I'm just like, and I also realized that there's, you know, people have their triggers that make them really just have a gag reflex and want to barf. Mine is spit. It's the most disgusting thing in the world. Anyway, coming up, Michael Keith from The Fuzz, formerly of The Fuzz. I guess they're still doing it sporadically. But a good friend of mine from Australia who comes on and talks some NBA with me. And we get into a whole number of things coming up right after this. And so stick around. You'll enjoy it. It's fun. We have a good conversation. We laugh a bunch. Or I laugh a bunch. I just laugh too much in general. And I'm not editing a single thing because I said some really stupid shit. And I'm leaving it there for you. And enjoy. So, after this brief musical interlude, we'll be right back.
But I figured it'd be better than nothing.
It's good, man. Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. You sound good.
Is it too hot?
No, you're too hot.
I'll stop it.
Speaking of, you're going in the summer in Australia, eh?
Yeah, it's been terribly muggy.
Oh, really?
Do you guys use that term, muggy?
Oh, yeah, we use muggy all the time.
Yeah, that's, well, there you go. That's, then you get my drift.
I get your drift. I'm feeling your vibe, bro. That's New York in August and September. September is just like muggy. It's just so humid. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never been there then, but I could imagine.
Yeah.
There's so much cement. Everywhere.
Yeah, it's the heat island effect is what my wife likes to tell me. So the the concrete heats up and it's a really good retainer of energy, I guess. It retains the heat very well. So then it just keeps giving off heat. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't ask. I'm not an architect. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm
sort of like, are we podcasting? Because I know sometimes when I listen to yours, you just like, oh yeah, we're already recording, by the way.
Little bit.
Because like, yeah, I don't want to give you like some gory details of, you know, if this is the thing that's going to go up.
It's fine. I'll cut out anything you want me to cut out. It's just nobody ever asks me to cut anything out, so I just don't edit. I just like fucking out in the world. Out in the world you go.
I'm good. What's the go today? It's like election day or something, right?
Yes, it is.
You must be pretty.
I'm excited and I'm nervous. I figured the best thing I could do to get my mind off of this is talk to an Australian who has no skin in the game whatsoever. that is you.
Yeah. That is me, yeah. Oh, we do have skin though. Like really. It definitely owns our headlines for a few days for sure.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, but it's not like you're gonna really be affected by the outcome. I mean, the midterms, it's not like we're electing a new president. We're just electing hopefully a Congress that will, or at least a House that will keep him in check and stop him from doing all these stupid fucking things. Not like that's really possible, but maybe they'll be able to impeach him. That would be nice.
They have to just take his Twitter off him.
Oh, God. That'd be a start. Something, anything. Just like, you know what? This isn't a political podcast. Don't get me started. People don't come here for politics. They come here for my ignorance. So, particularly my ignorance in basketball. You want to talk about basketball?
Yeah.
Before we get started. What? I think we had a little lull there. What?
There's a little glitch.
There's a little glitch
in the system.
Yeah. Before we get started, why don't you tell everybody about you and how they can find you and tell them about your podcast that is basically non-existent these days.
Okay. So I am Michael Keith of the Fuzz NBA. You can find us at Twitter at thefuzznba.com on Twitter. So I don't know how the .com works, but it just seems to. It probably doesn't. Yeah, and from there you can sort of, there's all sorts of links to all sorts of things to our non-existent podcast, which we've just basically been put on hold because both Byron and I have just had such a busy change in lifestyle. Like myself with a child, like a baby, just really puts a halt on things. Not just podcasting, a whole bunch of things puts a halt on. Yeah. Let's not go into that. But you know, look, we're definitely still keen to keep the ball rolling. I'm stoked that you got me on today.
Yeah, totally, man. I've been wanting to have you guys. Well, we tried to do it earlier in the year, but like the time when you both could come on just never happened. So now I'm just getting you.
And that was going to be predictions, and mine were all going to be so right. I'm spewing that we didn't do it.
Really? What were you going to predict?
Yeah, I would look like a genius.
What were you going to predict? Well, let me see.
I was going to predict that the Cavs were going to be terrible.
Yeah, who couldn't have predicted that? But let's talk about that. Let's start off with the Cavs. You know, it's funny. I started the season. I had a coworker I worked with, and her husband is a Cavaliers fan. He's from Cleveland. I feel bad for the guy, for a multitude of reasons, just because of that. but he's a big Cavs fan, and he thought, like, we were talked very briefly, and he said, you know, the Cavs could still make the playoffs this year, and I was so dismissive. All I said was, no, they won't. He's like, no, I think they got... I was like, no, they're not. It's just like, I was the biggest dick in the world to the point where I felt so bad about it. I actually came on here on one podcast. I don't know if you heard it. And I sort of like apologized. I'm like, I'm sorry. That was really dismissive. I was just rude of me. I didn't mean to be dismissive like that. I'm not that kind of guy. You know, and here we are. So far, I've been right. There's no chance they're sniffing the playoffs. I think they're 1-7 right now.
I think they might be more. I think they might be more like 1-9, to be honest.
Let me look. You talk. I'm gonna let you hop back in the podcasting game and go ahead and talk. Tell me your thoughts about the Cavs.
Oh well, I mean, I think it's pretty unfair, to be honest, to sort of expect much of this team. I mean,
one and
organizational.
Nine. One and nine.
Yeah, one and nine. Yeah. Organizational fatigue was was obvious. And the roster was built for LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, and you know, over time they traded every single asset they might have had or every single resource to basically make the team try and contend, which, you know, we could talk about those decisions. Obviously, some of those individually were terrible. Like, even I was watching the Nets play the other day and saw Joe Harris, and I was like, oh, they drafted him in the second round the year that LeBron came back.
Mm-hmm.
And he was someone that had potential. Even then, he wasn't quite ready to play back then. And now he's leading the league in three-point shooting, like, and he's getting solid regular minutes for the Nets right now. And they're like a good young team. He's somebody that could have really helped last year. He got shipped away in some deal. So there's a whole bunch of decisions that they did make. And that's just one example, where, you know, so we can't exactly, there is some blame there for the GMs and stuff like that. But I think this team currently as constructed was never going to do well without LeBron.
No,
it's kind of like you can't take him out of it and expect him to do well. I think the only thing that I find humorous is that there are people, and Tristan Thompson is apparently one of them, that thought they were going to be good.
Yeah, yeah. He was very vocal about that the East still goes through Cleveland right before the beginning of the season. I'm like, really, dude? You might want to temper those expectations just a little bit.
So I guess my thoughts, and then if you really wanted to reach, you could say, oh, well, we really haven't got to see Kevin Love. Like, you know, he hasn't been healthy and now he's out for 6 weeks with a foot surgery or whatever. So we haven't really had a chance to see the Kevin Love-led Cavaliers. But let's be honest, like, he was never going to take them into playoff contention.
I mean, you're talking about the same Kevin Love who never got Minnesota to the playoffs, right, while he was there?
Exactly.
When he was in his prime and when he was, like, averaging, like, what, 20 and 20 every night? Nah, it's like an exaggeration, but yeah, the Kevin Love that Kevin Love we haven't seen in a long time, and he wasn't enough to get Minnesota to the playoffs. I hate to tell people, but like, Kevin Love's a really good player. Kevin Love's a really nice complimentary piece on a championship team. Kevin Love is not a number one option, and we did see what it was like with just Kevin Love on this team and J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson, and whatever else you have, and Jetty Osman, but like. It just, like, we talked about this all last year. Like, people kept saying, like, I kept saying, if you take it, the fact that LeBron got that team to the playoffs, to the finals, was it a miracle? Because I kept saying, you take LeBron off this team and they are dog shit. They are garbage. And you took him off the team and guess what? They're dog shit. They are garbage. They are really garbage. And now, and here's, what do you think about the Ty Lue, like, firing? And you know, this is a couple weeks old now, but for me, I mean, it's been handled so poorly, and he's just been made the scapegoat. What are your thoughts about the whole thing? And then I'll give you mine.
Ty Lue specifically, I think that this sort of comes back to what we spoke about. The whole thing was built around LeBron. I think Ty Lue was a tailored pick for LeBron. Kevin Love being a complimentary piece, like, yeah, of course he is with LeBron, but once you take the LeBron away, he's barely even that, to be honest. And same with the rest of these guys. So I think that, I guess my thoughts on Ty Lue, I just don't know if he's a good coach. I mean, how can we know? I think it was pretty unfair what they did, the way that they fired him, if they were expecting to win and that's why they fired him. I mean, that's pretty silly. I guess when we're talking about the Cavs, I will give you a chance before I completely sort of go in a different direction with it to sort of give you, so you can have your thoughts on Ty. But to me, it's like, we need to talk about the future of this team, like Colin Sexton, Chetty Osman, who else they got? Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, these guys, Larry Nance. So this really is where, if we're going to talk about the Cavs, I think that team needs to be more focused on, and anything to do with LeBron, anything to do with that 4 year period, to me, it's just over. All that's left is skeletons and, you know, some lifeless bodies that are still there.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it's over.
Oh, totally. It was over the minute that the finals ended. It was over. It was over before that. We all know he wasn't coming back.
See, game one of the finals when LeBron drops 50,
yeah,
and they have a chance to win. If George Hill hits a free throw, if J.R. Smith doesn't lose his mind, and Cleveland go up 1-0. in, you know, against that team, like you said, with that team that he had, yeah, you're talking about something like incredible potentially. And then game three was close too. Kevin Durant had like a 45-point triple-double to win, to help him win, close that game out too. So it's not like they weren't competitive. And I would say this in fairness to that Cavs team. They were all veteran players that understood how to play basketball. They all understood their roles. They all understood where they needed to be. And when you throw LeBron in with that, it works. You know what I mean? They weren't a bad team, really. They are a bad team if you take LeBron out.
They were a bad team last year. They were like the worst historic team on defense to ever make the finals. They were like 28th on defense last year, all year. They were awful. They were not a good team. And listen, the fact that they almost won that first game and LeBron had to put up 50, that speaks that much more about the man's legacy. Like, nobody else could have done that. To take that bunch of guys and get that close to beating one of the best teams of all time. I don't know, but that aside, like, I sort of feel bad for Ty Lue. He's been made the scapegoat. I don't know that he really wanted to be there to train a bunch of new guys. And you're right, he was actually handpicked by LeBron. He was the guy he wanted after they fired David Blatt. Cool. All good. Having LeBron James as a player for Ty Lue almost gave the man a nervous breakdown. So I almost feel good for him, like, that he's not coaching right now. He can take some time off, spend some time with his family, get his head right. I think he will get another job in the NBA because, like you said, it's the jury's out. We don't know if he actually can coach. We don't know if he did a good job or not because that team was run by LeBron. So I think it's interesting, though, that the Cavs organization is such a shit show, such a train wreck, that they didn't even ask Larry Drew if he wanted the interim coaching job before they like announced him, and he's like, no, back up, I didn't agree to this. And then they had to go, yeah, like publicly had to go through negotiations about this whole thing. Like, Dan Gilbert gets everything he deserves. That dude is a shitbag. Sorry, I'm just putting it out there. I'll never get a job in the NBA because I just said that. But whatever, the guy's a fuckface. He really is. Like, he preyed on people. His predatory loans arena. Like, he, during the housing market bubble thing, he's a dirtbag. He made his millions on giving loans to people who couldn't afford it and then foreclosing on them. He's a shitbag. I don't feel bad for him at all. I hope he sells the franchise. I hope the city of Cleveland gets a better owner. They deserve better. But, wow, I just really went off for a second there, didn't I? He's also a Trump supporter, so fuck that guy.
He did. You are really going ham on Dan Gilbert.
Going ham on Dan Gilbert. But the fact that they came out and, like, you know, said that Larry Drew was going to be the interim coach before they ever even asked him, had any kind of discussion, is just telling of where this franchise is right now. It's hilarious. He ultimately did sign, but he made sure that he got his salary and some assurances from them. Well, he strong-armed him into it, and he should. He's not a first-time head coach. What are your thoughts?
I can't defend the Cleveland organization, but at the same time, what I will say is that LeBron is one, like, beast of an entity in himself. Like, if he comes to the team like he did 4 years ago, he got them a championship and he got them to the finals 4 years. So that's what you get with him. Mm-hmm. But what you're left with is just ashes. He's sucked the life out of everything else.
Yeah.
You know, if they had still had Kyrie Irving, or if they had still had Dion Waiters, I mean, that's probably a bad example. If they, you know, like,
I like it.
But they don't. They've got nothing. I mean, and part of that is on Dan Gilbert, you know. Like, he traded Kyrie for that Nets pick. He could have traded that Nets pick for Kemba Walker. And they could have had Kemba Walker right now. And if they had Kemba Walker, then yeah, sure, let's talk about them as a potential 8th seed or at least a reason to go watch them. I heard that the tickets were down for $2. They're selling for $2, Cavs tickets.
It makes sense.
And that was before Kevin Love got injured.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I guess I'm my opinion's sort of conflicted. I think that, yes, they made mistakes. They're a terrible organization, especially compared to other teams. But if LeBron comes, you know, and this is what we're seeing with the Lakers right now, he brings – he brings something amazing, but he leaves you with just nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he brings a circus to town for sure. It's in every sense of the word. It's the organization. Like, look what's happening in the Lakers right now. They hired a bunch of knuckleheads. Or they signed a bunch of knuckleheads. Their front office is like starting to crack down on the coach who's been there for the last 4 years and has done a really good job. He got that young talented team to 35 wins last year when they had probably no business playing that well, but they did. He got the most out of them. Even when Lonzo Ball was, I shouldn't say they had no business playing that well, but he got a lot out of them. And even when Lonzo Ball was injured half the season, they had a really good, they had a decent defense. They were playing exciting basketball. LeBron comes to town and now it's his show. And now Magic is putting pressure on Luke Walton and he could be fired and all this other kind of crazy stuff. You probably heard a lot of people talk about how they didn't want LeBron James on their team. He almost went to Philly. At the outset, I was like, it's interesting. Like, you add LeBron to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I don't know if it fits, but he would make it fit. They would make it fit. But I was always worried about everything that came with it. And this is exactly what I didn't want. And you're absolutely right. Organizational fatigue. Lots of people have talked about it. They were exhausted from the LeBron show. So, I mean, good luck to the Lakers. I think this is LeBron's last stop anyway. So it's not like, you know, when he goes out, maybe he'll have groomed someone else to take his place.
I've got my thoughts on that in terms of why he chose LA over, say, Philly. In terms of if we just look at it from a basketball perspective. So LA's got young, talented players. So does Philly. I think that Philly's got young generational players, though, at least potentially in Embiid and Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas LA's young guys, Ingram, Kuzma, Ball, people throw Josh Hart into that. One of those guys might end up a 10-time All-Star. You know what I mean? But it's almost like we already know that none of them are generational, potentially top five, top two, three in the league type guys. Like, that's my opinion anyway. Embiid to me looks like he's going to be an MVP candidate for a good chunk of his prime.
Yeah.
Simmons has that potential. I know we're going to talk about him a bit later. I mean, does Brandon Ingram really? I mean, does Lonzo Ball really? So I think that the reason why LeBron went to LA, if you're just talking about basketball, and I know people have got their theories on the rest of it, like he just went there because he wanted to live in LA. Like, of course, why wouldn't you? But he can probably rip that franchise apart, trade away everything they've got, suck the life out of it, just like he did with Cleveland, and get what he wants. Eventually, you know, obviously they're taking their time, and like you said, they signed a bunch of knuckleheads. But look, would it really be that bad if they traded Ingram and Ball for like Damian Lillard? Do you know what I mean? Would the fan base really be up in arms that much, the LA fan base? I'm just not sure they would.
I think Portland would be up in arms with that trade. I think Portland would be beside themselves with anger.
Well, I guess that's the point. See, LeBron needs those guys to be good enough to be able to be traded for someone that can actually help him win.
Yeah.
But not good enough that the fan base would just be up in arms if they traded him. Like, can you imagine if he came to Philly and then Philly traded Embiid for, like, Damian Lillard?
You know what would happen? I would now be a Portland Blazers fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So that's the kind of, I don't think LeBron would have been able to come to Philly and really flex his muscle. I just don't think that he would have had the public sway. Whereas in LA, I think he can go there and he can really make that roster whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And I think he will. I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, every other place he's gone, he's been able to make it work. He's been to the finals literally every single season.
But he's been in the East every single season for the last 8 years. He hasn't had to play a team like the Warriors until he got to the finals. So,
no. And this year, I think, even if he was in the East, he'd struggle against what's coming through with Toronto, Milwaukee, Boston, even Indiana. I mean, those four teams are really, really good.
It hurts me that you didn't mention Philly in that list, but
I've got to be realistic. My opinion on Philly is that they're a couple of years away, but I think that those four teams would all beat last year's Cavs. It would be amazing to watch. I would love to have watched him stay and just go up against, like, I would love to have seen one of those teams take him down.
Yeah.
In the East.
Do you think part of the reason
I'm not going to get to say that.
Do you think, this just occurred to me. You think part of the reason he left the East could be that he saw the end coming in the East? Like he was finally going to get knocked off his perch in the East by Giannis or by now Kawhi or maybe the Sixers. And like, you've ruled the roost for 8 years. And if you get knocked off and don't make it to the finals, it's kind of like tarnishes your legacy just a little bit. It's a crackpot theory, but maybe if you're in the West and everyone talks about the West being so much better and there being, you know, like the competition is so much greater and you're up against the Warriors where you can't possibly hope to win anyways. It's okay if you don't win. It's okay. It's like, it's not going to hurt your legacy.
That's definitely, those thoughts have definitely gone through my mind when I think about LeBron James's legacy. I mean, it's so much better that he left the East on top. Before those teams had a chance to really, because they were all gearing up, mm-hmm. and now they're geared up. I mean, Boston is just going to be incredible. Like they really are. I have my thoughts on Boston.
I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, at the moment they're still figuring it out, but they are going to be. I'm talking over the next 2 to 3 seasons when they finally do make some decisions on the direction. Like they've just got unlimited options and unlimited resource to sort of add.
Exactly. They've got unlimited resources. Yeah.
So they were coming for LeBron. They were going to beat him. It was only a matter of time. And he got out. Good kudos to him.
All right.
And I think, going to the West, I'll just let me finish this point on LeBron and the West being strong. It is strong, but it is really top heavy right now. I think that if KD leaves and if they trade Draymond or Clay, Steph's 32.
No, like, I think he's 30.
I just think that...
Isn't he?
Is he only 30, is he?
I think he's still really young, yeah. I think he's like 30, maybe 31.
I think his ankles and knees are like 32, 34, though.
They're out in front.
So I guess what I'm saying is I could see a situation where the West breaks wide open. LeBron, if he can just land someone like Durant or Kawhi to play with him, you just... don't know. We might only be 2 or 3 seasons away from seeing him back in the finals against Boston, which would be an NBA's wet dream, like in terms of the marketing and stuff like that. So
the Lakers Celtics, yeah. Well, let's move on from LeBron. I've spent so much of the last 2 days talking about LeBron for no apparent reason. Do you want to give me?
He does that?
What's that?
He does that. He'll get you.
Yeah. We just had
LeBron. He'll suck you right in and make you talk about him.
No. Oh, really? Wow. This got dirty quick. Michael, let's talk about... Give me two... All right, so let me ask you this. So far, you've watched, obviously, some NBA, right? I don't know. Maybe your watching is down a bit because you have a child to take care of now, but give me your top two East and top two West teams that you're really like interested in this season. The ones that you can't stop watching.
Okay, I guess my answers are going to be fairly obvious or sort of not exciting, but I really do. I watch every Sixers game and I've been watching a lot of Boston. I'm pretty fascinated. I'm a huge Kyrie Irving fan. I always have been.
I know. I've never understood that about you.
I just love him. He's one of those players where I just love watching him play. I just, when he's going well and he's pulling off the shit that he tries to do, to me, that's one of the most entertaining things. Like, I know some people think that about other players. Like, some people love Steph Curry or they love LeBron or they love whoever, like Giannis. I get all that, but for me, it's just like, I've just been taken by him. Like when I went to New York, to watch a game, I just had to make sure that I got to see Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy the Cavs were in town that week. But anyway.
Be honest, you planned your trip around that game. Telling the wife that we're going to go around Christmas, it's going to be gorgeous. No, the real reason you went is because the Cavs were playing in New York.
Yeah. And so Philly, they're a really exciting team by anyone's standards. And because I try to like really cover and follow the Australian players as much as I can, I'll just watch that because, you know, obviously Ben Simmons is the main Aussie in the league right now to be covering and talking about and watching. In the West, I'm not really loving the West Coast that much, to be honest. I I've watched a little bit of the Warriors because they've just been on such a tear.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing some of that stuff, like Steph Curry, the way he's been playing, and then the Klay Thompson game, I must admit, I do find that great. Like, it's great basketball to watch. And I root actively against them every time. But at the same time, I'm just so impressed by what I see. And I know one of your teams was the Nuggets, but I've been loving the Nuggets as well.
Yeah.
I got a bit of a soft spot for them. Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm not historically a Nuggets fan. I don't really care about the Nuggets. They don't really do anything for me. But I watched that game against the Celtics last night, and God damn, they are good. They are fun. And I don't know, man. Like, Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, they're like, they're, and Jokic, they're a good young team. They're a lot better than I expected. Because here's the thing. The last 2 or 3 years, everyone is coming into the season like, the Nuggets are going to be good this year. The Nuggets are going to be good this year. Watch out. The Nuggets are going to be good this year. And they just constantly disappoint. You're like, this is not really fun. Like, we came into the season thinking Mike Malone was going to get fired because he just wasn't doing it. They re-upped him. They put their confidence behind him. And he's got this team playing lights out, man. They're like 9-1 right now or something like that. Hold on. I can look this up. I have the power of the internet in my hand. And they're just like,
I think they are. They've definitely only lost once.
Yeah. And they're playing just this incredible brand of basketball that's like, we thought that Utah was going to be doing this. They're 4-6. Not happening. I actually was hoping to watch, like, I started out the season watching New Orleans a lot, thinking they were going to be really good. I really love Anthony Davis. I love Drew Holiday. I thought that team was going to be a lot of fun. I was all on board with them getting Julius Randle. So that was one of my teams in the West that I started watching. And then, for whatever reason, they're just falling apart. I guess because Anthony Davis has been a little bit injured. And
he looks a little bit disengaged to me. I've got to be honest. I watched their game the other day. I can't remember who it was against. It might have been against OKC.
Actually, is he injured?
He just didn't look.
Yeah, he didn't.
He has been missing games with I think he had a sprained elbow or something like that. It wasn't anything too serious, but he just doesn't look engaged yet. I think that he'll get there. But you know, there's obviously been other talk. He signed with Rich Paul, whatnot. So yeah, I agree with you. I was excited for them too, but from what I've seen, I haven't stuck with it.
Yeah.
Utah's a team that I was going into the season wanting to watch a lot of because Dante Exum's finally healthy. So been wanting to watch him, and also Joe Ingles is, you know, finally sort of cemented his role in the league. And
I thought you were going to say Tom White, but yeah.
They've been underperforming, and yeah, it's actually kind of, it's interesting watching them struggle a little bit, to be honest. I think that they're very much the same team they were last year, but they're just not winning yet.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, I think that Donovan Mitchell is actually having a little bit of a sophomore slump. I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's his confidence, or he actually rolled an ankle a couple weeks ago. Excuse me. And everyone was worried he was going to be out. He came back. I got to stop drinking beer during the podcast because I just like have all these burps that want to come up right now. But I think if he's struggling a little bit, that's a huge blow to their offense. And you could see why they wouldn't be winning without, like, you know, Rudy Gobert is not an offensive juggernaut. He's your defensive juggernaut. He's not going to get you a whole lot of buckets. So if you have Joe Ingles carrying the load by himself, you know, Joe Ingles is good. He's not great. He can't carry your team. It makes sense. I think they're just going to take a minute to get back to their flow. They, you know, they had a struggle a bit at times last year when Rudy Gobert was out. So I don't know. I'm not really worried about them right now. We'll see what happens. But speaking of Australians, why don't you give me the rundown on your Australian players? So we got, let's start with Ben Simmons. We were going to touch on him a little bit. Let's touch on him. Ben Simmons, he came out, I think it was the first and second games of the year. He looked absolutely incredible, unstoppable. And since then, he's looked like an average player. I mean, an average player who's Ben Simmons. So not an average player, but he just hasn't been effective because he has no shooting around him and he refuses to shoot the ball. What are your thoughts about Ben Simmons?
I guess my thoughts on that, I definitely agree that the first game he looked like the best player on the court against the Celtics. One thing that I noticed in that game is that Brett Brown played him almost the entire first half, only gave him a couple of minutes rest, and then he played most of the second half until the game sort of got out of control there late in the game. And then it wasn't long after that that he came up limp. It was his second game in, and he, I think he only played 4 or 5 minutes maybe, and he came up limp with his back. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if he's 100. I don't think he's 100%. He doesn't look injured, but he also doesn't seem to be able to sort of move as athletically as he as my memory of him. But it's sort of, I guess it's a weird thing to say, but the issues that you mentioned to do with the lineups and the shooting and stuff like that, I think they're more what's sort of slowing him down so much than his health. But okay, I'm not worried about him. It's his second year. He's 22. Mm-hmm. There are certain gifts that he has as a basketball player that are always going to be there. They're not going anywhere. His court vision, his IQ, the way that he can just, make the right read, make the right play. He's still figuring a lot of the stuff out to do with his shooting. And his decision-making as well is, he's still learning. He's actually had quite a few turnovers lately. I'm just not worried about it. I just think that when I think of Ben Simmons, I'm thinking long-term. I'm thinking when he's 26, 27, he has a chance to be like a top five player in the league. That's what I see. He has to develop. And I think that some people are sort of really overreacting right now about his lack of development. But, I mean, it's 10 games. And not only that, but the last quarter of last year, Embiid was out. Fultz was out. So you had Simmons and just playing four outs. You had Simmons with four shooters, basically, the entire time that he was on the floor. And he looked unbelievable.
For that 16-game win streak, yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, they didn't lose. So I guess my theory on that is if they want to, they could just go back to that. And I'm sure that's what Ben's camp and that's what Ben's thinking. He's like, why am I playing with Embiid and Fultz and why won't you just build around me? And I'm sure he's internally a little bit frustrated and impatient.
Hey, buddy, and don't start that. It's way too early to start with that stuff. Don't start any discord in the Sixers camp, man. My heart can't take it.
I just think that these guys want everything they want it now. Like Embiid is 24. He just signed a huge deal. But if he makes All NBA or if he makes or Defensive Player of the Year, or even if he got MVP, his deal goes up by like, I don't know. It's in the tens of, if not twenties of millions of dollars that his deal goes up by.
Wasn't that just for the first year or is that for every year?
I'm pretty sure that's for every year. And Simmons has got a deal with Nike where he makes an extra. I think if he's an all-star or if he has All-NBA, gets All-NBA, something like that, his deal goes up by something like 10 million over 5 years. Something like that. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of got different motivations there. So these guys aren't patient, and I think a lot of the noise you hear is like out of their individual camps. It's like, oh, we want to run the team through Ben. We think we should have four shooters, whatever. And then other people want to keep Embiid and even trade Simmons. You're hearing all this talk. It's like, man,
that's
settle down, guys.
That's like, NBA Twitter. Nobody actually thinks that. Like, it's just NBA Twitter like, hey, trade Ben Simmons because you need another shooter around Joel Embiid. It's just nuts. Like, calm down. Calm down, everybody.
It is NBA Twitter. You're right. The people that make the decisions aren't affected by that. They got the jobs because they're not, they're a bit more level-headed, you're right. But a lot of the reporters, especially Philly's reporters, are very like reactionary, don't you think? Like on Twitter, like some of them are quite negative and quite reactionary to
speaking as a negative Elfie and myself or just outside of Philadelphia. You could say that. I don't know, man. Like, I think most of it is like people just love, people love to get on Twitter and just say shit. But I will say this. I don't think that Ben Simmons' struggles are uniquely his own. I think Markelle Fultz has a lot to do with it. And I said some crazy, I don't know if you listen to Dunk Tales podcast, but I'm going to implore everyone who's listening to this podcast to listen to last night's podcast with James when I went off about Markelle Fultz. This is aimed specifically at Matt Hill. Go listen to the halfway through of the Dunk Tales podcast last night. I'm sort of out on Markelle Fultz. He should be running the second team, at least for now. until you can figure out if he's got any. Listen, you know what? We were talking about your Australian players. Just give me rank your Australian players for me. Let's do that. Just give me your Australian player ranks, or I'm going to go nuts and talk about the Sixers the rest of the time.
Okay. Well, look, yes, Ben's obviously I still think our best player, and he's got the most potential for sure. And then, like, we've already spoken about Joe Ingles. I think that if I was constructing a starting lineup for the Australian national team, I would have
They call you to be head coach. So it's just a couple of years away.
It would be me with all my NBA basketball experience. So I'd have Ben basically running the point, but also playing power forward on defense. I'd have Joe Ingles in there because I think he's just a great pick and roll ball handler. If you go under the screen, he's going to shoot. He's gotten a lot more aggressive with that 3-point shot and with mixed results, but you know, we know that he can hit him. And then you got Patty Mills, who's having one of the best he's had of his whole career right now. He's averaging the most minutes, the most points. His role has really sort of gone up, especially because they had injuries there. San Antonio had all those injuries at the point guard rotation. Derek White and DeJounte Murray both out. DeJounte for the whole year with the ACL.
Yeah, that's right.
So Patty's sort of he's kind of the last piece of that team that won in, what was it, 2014. So he's having a great year. So I'd have him in at point guard, basically. But raw running off the ball, a bit like how Philly used JJ. I could imagine him just darting around. And then I'd have Aaron Baines in at center. I mean, loving what he gives to Boston, especially to their defense and their rebounding.
Can I ask you, has he hit a 3-point shot against any other team besides Philadelphia? Have you seen this? Have you seen any other 3-point shots? Because I'm pretty sure he saved them all for Philadelphia.
I'll tell you what I have seen is a bunch of Philly fans just whinging about that exact fact.
Oh, my God.
That he can only shoot against them.
He can't shoot a three, and every time he hits, like, at least three of them.
Yeah. No, look, I don't know if that shot's going to be something that will stick. But if it is, I mean, you know, but yeah, I think his record is literally something like 2 from 20, apart from against Philly, where he shoots like 70%.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so yeah, you've got Baines, center, Simmons at the four, Ingles at the three, Patty Mills at the one. And at the two, I'm probably going to go with Brokoff, which is someone, he's playing for the Dallas Mavs, and he's someone that got signed this year. He's like a legit 3-point threat. He shot over 50% for the whole season in EuroLeague last year. But so far, the Mavs aren't playing him. He's kind of just riding the pine. So I'm hoping that he gets, as the season develops and it becomes more and more obvious that the Mavs are shit, that they should may as well play him and just see what he's got. I think he could potentially be like another breakout, sort of like how Joe Ingles has broken out. I think Brokoff has got that potential. And then, like, on the bench, man, we're still NBA deep. We've got guys like Thon Maker and Dele and Dante Exum all coming off the bench.
I'm surprised you didn't put Exum in as a starter.
It's another six. I just think that I'd take the veterans at this point. I think Exum's still just got a lot to learn and prove. He just hasn't played a lot. He came into the NBA at 18, so he hadn't played a lot before that. He didn't play college or high school ball. He went and trained at Australia's Institute of Sports.
Mm-hmm.
So he really hasn't played a ton of basketball. And then he's obviously just been so injury riddled, and he's never been able to develop a proper role for Utah. This year, I think he's finally starting. They've got him in a role. So even when they've had injuries, the Jazz have had injuries to their starters, they're not putting Exum in. They're keeping him in his role off the bench, which I think is a good thing. You know, I think that he can, I still believe by 26, 27, this is one of my takes that I will die on.
You're going to die on that hill. Go for it.
I'm going to die on this hill. I've said it years ago and I'll stick to it, that by the time Exum is 26 or 27, he'll be a top 30 player in the NBA.
I mean, I can see that happening. He's got all the tools, right? He just needs to stay healthy. He's shown signs of being an incredible player. He's still really athletic even after all those injuries. I think, and he's got the IQ to do it. He seems like a smart enough guy.
Yeah.
By the way, you can have Jonah Bolden. I heard you mention him. It's not Jonah Bolden. Send him back. He's all yours. Actually, I think I'm just anti any Brian Colangelo pick. So Just take him right back.
But Joe Did Bolton, you see what he... You know, they dropped him down to the G League affiliate, Philly's G League affiliate.
The and Blue Coats?
In his first game, he had like... I think his first game, he had like 30 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 blocks. He absolutely lit the G League up. He'll be back in... He'll be back in the A team in no time, mate.
All right.
You don't worry about Jonah Bolden.
Well, suddenly I have more confidence in Jonah Bolden than I do in Markel Fultz, so that's terrible.
Yeah. So that's sort of a bit of a brief rundown of the Australians. I think I must have mentioned them all. There's just so many in the NBA now.
I know, it's crazy. As an Australian, you must be super happy because like you have all these players in the NBA now. And I don't know if people know this, but the NBA in Australia is huge. Like, everyone in Australia loves the NBA, it seems like, from my perspective.
Yeah. No, it's really big. I think per capita league pass is the most popular in Australia than anywhere else in the world, apart from North America.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're sort of pretty into it. We've got the Australian team, national team, is going to be playing against the American national team before the in a World Cup warm-up game. So it's around, I think it's around August next year. So it's sort of after the NBA season, but both teams will be full strength because they literally the World Cup starts in, I think, 3 or 4 days after these games.
Hmm.
So, and they put it in a in an Australian rules stadium. So this stadium holds, I think it's something like 50 or 60,000 people, and this thing is selling out. They're playing
really?
For, yeah.
For an so NBA like, game?
It's not NBA. It's Australia versus Australia. USA. Yeah. But, you know, it's going to be full strength. Like, both teams will be full strength. When I say full strength, whoever the US sends for the World Cup squad. So, you know, obviously it's not going to be Curry or Durant or LeBron. It might be, but I doubt it. Mm-hmm. If those guys play again, it'll probably be an Olympic campaign. They won't play a World Cup campaign. But I think we'll still probably get, like, I don't know, Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. Probably Ben
Markel
Simmons.
Markel Fultz.
Is Simmons going to be Markel Fultz? He's not going to be that good. Is Simmons going to play for the Australian team or is he going to play for the US team?
No, he played for Australia.
Is he really?
He's already played for us.
All right. Yeah,
he's already, we nailed that down early, mate.
Nice. And I'm pretty sure Embiid's just always going to play for Africa, which is awesome. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't think Embiid's ever going to play international ball really because he's the only guy, everyone else in his country plays volleyball.
That's true. By the way, I hear the second most popular sport in Australia is ultimate boomerang. It's like ultimate frisbee here. It's a joke. It's a terrible, terrible joke.
I don't know what.
Never mind.
I've heard
all right,
like
moving
second...
on.
I was going to say something really mean about America, but I won't.
No, please do. Please do. We deserve it. We absolutely deserve it. Look what we elected.
I was going to say, like, I've heard, like, the second most favorite sport in America is just like getting guns and shooting people. Like,
I think you're right. Yes. I think it's a touchy subject. But yes. Anyway, yeah, moving on.
I don't know about this boomerang shenanigans. What's going on with it?
Yeah, nothing. It was a made up thing. Have you never thrown, like, you're telling me you're Australian, you've never thrown a boomerang? How dare you?
I've thrown a boomerang, but I've never been able to get it to come back.
You know what? When I was younger, I threw a boomerang too. I never got it to come back. I don't know how you do that shit. It's crazy.
Yeah, the Aboriginal people can do it. They can get it to pretty much land on a 5-cent piece, mate.
Really? Have you seen someone do it?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Enough about boomerangs.
Enough about guns and boomerangs.
Yeah. It's got really dark really quick. Jesus. I'm going to play a quick game with you. Which surprises you more? You ready? We want quick answers because we're running long. Which surprises you more, the Wizards sucking or the Kings being good?
The Kings being good.
Same. I think anyone could have predicted the Wizards sucking. Especially adding fucking, what's his name? Dwight Howard and Doc's kid. What was his name? Austin Rivers.
Austin, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate Austin Rivers, but I also don't like him. So I'm kind of ambivalent. But, it, you know, two big mouths that just, like, don't get along with their teammates. What are you going to do? But who would have saw that coming?
Yeah, no, look, that's a complete surprise that the Kings got good. I guess they've got a lot of young talent, but really it's De'Aaron Fox taking that jump.
Mm-hmm.
If he had a sort of, I guess he really must have worked on his game in the offseason. I didn't watch a lot of him last year, but what I did see is just, I didn't think he was ready to take the kind of leap that he's taken so far. And it's early, so we'll see. And they've obviously got some other really good young players that are getting a chance. And yeah, the Kings are good. I think they're like, they remind me of the Nets sort of 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Except better.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe 1 year ago. Last year's Nets were kind of good. I think that's what they remind me of. There was the Nets kind of flirted with potentially coming up into the playoff race, but they just didn't quite have. And I think that's what's going to happen to the Kings this year. I think they're going to fall right out. Yeah. I still think they're going to end up third or fourth worst.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to last. I mean, I'm rooting for them. I'm hoping it will, but I just think they're too young. Even though last night I said the exact opposite thing, that I think they could sustain it. I'm an idiot. I had a day to think about it. I'm correcting myself right now. It's my prerogative. Thank you. All right, what surprises you more? Dwight Howard making a pain in the ass joke about his injury, or Kyrie apologizing about the flat earth theory?
That's a good question. I think it surprised me that Kyrie apologized
about the correct answer.
About the flat earth. I thought he was going to die on that hill, speaking of dying on hills.
Right? And speaking of being able to change your mind, there you go.
But in saying that, it shouldn't surprise us that Kyrie changes his mind. He's notorious for that. He's, yeah. I don't think you can really trust a lot of what Kyrie Irving says, to be honest, ever.
That's fair.
I think he says what he thinks he needs to say at all times. I don't think anybody truly knows what he's actually thinking or what his real motivations are.
Including Kyrie.
probably including Kyrie himself.
I find, you know what, Kyrie and I are kind of kismet spirits. We never know what we're going to say until it comes out of our mouth. So it seems to work well for both of us.
That's true.
I actually agree with you. I never thought that he would take back the flat earth theory. And he I know he was joking around when he said it, but he was also like, I'm sorry I said it. I didn't think it was going to be this big of a deal. He's like, I was just trying to make a point. Like, go research things for yourself. So I'm back on Kyrie now that he came out and like apologized for it. Even if it was like, he showed a humorous side. He showed a more human side, like one that wasn't like purposefully trying to say things to fuck with you. You know what I mean? He wasn't trying to be a faux intellectual. He was just being honest. And like, and I respected that. I'm back on Kyrie's camp. By the way, he hit a nasty fadeaway jumper with someone in his face. I think it was Jason Tatum was in his face last night. Or not Jason Tatum, sorry. That would be on his own team.
Yeah.
whoever it was was right in his face, and he hit a crazy step back floater over him. And
he's coming into form. His last four games have been really, really good.
He is really, like, I don't trust him most of the time, but in clutch situations, he's the most clutch freaking player you've ever seen. It's nuts. So I get that about it. What surprises you more, Steph Curry's incredible start to the season or the Bucks being 8-1? I think 9-1 after tonight, maybe. They're playing Portland.
I'm gonna say Steph Curry's start to the year. I really honestly didn't think that we'd see Steph play like this again. I just, maybe if Durant had left in free agency, it would have been a bit easy to predict, oh, Curry's just going to come out and show the world what he's got. But I didn't see the motivation there for him to play like this. He's playing like he's got something to prove.
Totally.
Which is funny, because all the talk that you, all the reports here, it's all happy, and that they're both, him and Durant are both happy for each other, and there's no internal competition and that sort of thing. But the actions on the court speak otherwise. Like, those guys have been going, they're playing against each other. I know they have to play against other teams every night, but to me, it looks like it's Durant versus Curry in terms of who's going to do something more amazing that night. And then every now and then Clay will pop up and be like, hey, don't forget about me.
Hey, I'm over here.
I can still break your 3-point record.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the way that the fan base on Twitter react like that too. Like, have you ever tried to tell a Warriors fan that Durant's better than Curry? Like, they fight you over it.
I gotta be honest.
Hang on, they both play for your team, right?
I gotta be honest with you, man. I've never tried to talk to a Warriors fan. I'm keeping my distance. You know, the crazy thing is, like, I know everyone hates the Warriors because they're so good. They're unstoppable. I'm not a Warriors fan. I mean, I'm sort of a Warriors fan. I don't really watch them during the regular season because I know they're just going to win, but I still find it fun. Like, the fact that Curry is doing this and Durant does it every other night and Klay can break the 3-point record again. It's amazing to me. And I kind of don't want it to stop. I want a team to be good enough to take them down. I want the next team that's going to win the championship to be better than the Warriors are right now. That's really what I hope. And that would be insane. Incredible. I don't want the Warriors to go away and lose strength and not be this great anymore and lose the championship. I want somebody to be better. And that's like, so for me, like, I love having them be this good. It makes me think that, like, there's another step to take with the NBA. Like, people can get there. Am I smoking crack or something?
No, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. And I think this year we are going to see it. Maybe not see them lose, but I think we're going to see them challenge in a way they haven't been. Because whoever comes out of the East, they're not going to be able to just deal with all we've got to do is beat LeBron and his boys that can't play, it's been like that every year. So they're going to have to deal with either Toronto, who are really, really deep and versatile and can defend and can score, and mm-hmm. or they're going to have to deal with someone like Boston, who just, I mean, who knows what their lineup's even going to look like. But one thing that you can be sure is that those guys are not going to be easy to beat in the finals. Yeah. They've just got so much talent at every position, and they go right down to 11 or 12 players deep. Have injuries or whatever. And if it's not one of those two teams, you've got something like the Bucks with someone like Giannis, who's just, I guess that would be the most similar scenario for them if, like, coming up against LeBron and the Cavs, but,
right.
But the Bucks are better. They're better than last year's Cavs, I reckon. Totally. I mean, look, it's obviously LeBron is still the best player, and the way he was playing last year in the playoffs was just unbelievable. So he was still a problem for them, that's just the finals. But to get through the West again, I think that Houston will still be good. Did you hear they just rehired their defensive coach for the rest of the year, mm-hmm. the one that sort of helped them work out how to play last year? So I think that's going to really help them get them back on track. If they do end up trading for Jimmy Butler, I really do think that they're going to be a problem for Golden State. Look, I don't think that Golden State will lose, but it could be 7 grueling games again like it was last year. I mean, the fact that they just got to walk through the finals in 4, you know, I'm with you. I don't want to see that again. I don't think we're going to see that again.
No, I don't think so either. I was going to say, I agree with you about the Bucks being better than the Cavs last year. Yes, but I don't. But let me put the caveat in there that Giannis is definitely not as good as LeBron is yet. He could get there, but he's not on that level yet. But as a team overall, they're more cohesive. They got better players throughout. I think they are a better team than last year's Cavs. All right, last one. Which surprises you more, the Lakers or the Wolves' dysfunction to start the season?
Oh, it's got to be the Lakers' dysfunction.
Really? More than the Wolves? All right.
The Wolves was obvious.
Yeah, that's fair. That's true. Yeah, but so was the Lakers. We knew, like, we saw this coming a mile away. Anybody who knows the LeBron James teams, we just talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. You could see this coming from a mile away. So I don't know. I'm torn.
Are the Lakers dysfunctional, or are they just the Lakers?
I mean, they're talking about firing their head coach. It's a little dysfunctional. What's their record now? 2-7, 2-6, 4-6.
No, they're 4-6. Yeah, I guess that's the thing with me about the Lakers is, like, I don't really see them as all that dysfunctionally. I think they've just got unrealistic expectations, given what their roster is. I think what you've got in Minnesota is just that is dysfunction. Like, that's how you describe it. If you're talking about a dysfunctional NBA team and organization, you've got a coach that's a GM that isn't making the right moves as a GM to try to save his coaching either reputation or job, which is going to be fruitless because he's going to lose that and he's probably never going to get hired again. You've got a star player that is doing the most ridiculous bullshit, like waving his towel with the opposing team's fans and calling out the young players on his team and doing everything that you just shouldn't do. And acting like he's some sort of god when the best thing that he ever did was blow up that Bulls team. Like,
that's true. That's probably
he's
true.
Done nothing. Yeah, he's no, done nothing. He's a good player, but he's done nothing. Player.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So yeah, to me, I mean, I am more surprised. I'm actually surprised that people consider the Lakers dysfunctional. I just see them as, again, a team that has LeBron, that doesn't have much else. And I don't know what people expected, especially when they went and signed Rondo and Lance and JaVale McGee, and even though obviously he's been playing well, and Michael Beasley and all those guys, and Tyson Chandler's not going to help. Like, he's not going to do anything.
Probably not.
They're still going to suck. They're still going to. I'm telling you, they just don't have the talent, and they didn't. And LeBron, that roster isn't tailored for him, as opposed to the Cleveland didn't have the talent last year either, but they did have a tailored roster for LeBron. Whereas this team, you've got LeBron, but a roster that's not tailored for LeBron, that's also not that talented. That's sort of my opinion of the Lakers anyway.
And here we go talking about LeBron again. We just can't help it.
Well, you did bring up the Lakers dysfunction.
It's true. It's my fault. I apologize. All right, Michael, let's why don't you tell everybody where they can. Hopefully this podcast will get you back on the bandwagon and you and Byron can get off your lazy asses and make some more fuzz podcasts so I can listen. But why don't you tell everybody?
We will, man. I've got to get the fuzz happening again.
It's on you. It's on you.
It's on me. But look, you can find us at the Fuzz NBA on Twitter. That's probably the best spot for now. I think Byron had to like take the website down because he just couldn't afford it. He had to put groceries back on the table. So
that'll do it. Jesus Christ, that was bleak.
No, I think it's because he wanted a new 60-inch flat screen or something. I don't know, but he's taken all our money and he spent it elsewhere and not on the website. So if you just go to Twitter at the Fuzz NBA, you can find us there, and there's links to our personal Twitters from there and our podcast and stuff like that. But in the meantime, just thanks for having me on, Joe. I really do appreciate it. I know it must be late for you now over there in New York.
It's 8:30. It's fine. We did it early, so it's fine. Everybody else,
it only 8:30?
Yeah. Everybody else keeps me up till midnight. Like, goddamn, nobody's in, all these inconsiderate people. They're just like, hey, I'll come on your show, but you got to do it late.
8:30 is like, that's the night's only just getting started for you in New York.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have a couple of tinnies, as you guys say. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, let's not go back into the Australianisms again.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to pause this thing. Michael Keith, everybody, go check him out on Twitter, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.